but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
BFFT. From the PacWest Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
One of my favorite reads is House of Strauss. Ethan Strauss, House of Strauss. If you're not reading him, you may want to check it out. I think it's become increasingly difficult to be a sports fan. I feel a little bit distraction. I feel a little bit fractured. I feel a little bit like my sports experience is asking more and more of me. It's squeezing me. Are you a college football fan who feels like you're being squeezed a little bit? Are you a Major League Baseball fan who's going, I've got to pay $18.99 or $14.99 to see my team play? I'm already paying for the Sunday ticket and YouTube, and I'm paying for my Hulu sports package, and I'm paying for my Trailblazers to see them play. Do you feel like you're being pulled in a million directions? Ethan Strauss, houseofstrauss.com, friend of this show, wrote some smart stuff about this. There is a condition right now that is affecting and impacting sports fans that can best be described as, well, I'll let Ethan Strauss describe it. He's joining us now. How are you, man? How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm so happy to be talking to you about this. Yeah, tee me up. Where should I go with this?
Well, let's just start with the idea of, you know, you put a finger on something that I think a lot of fans are going through. As they're trying to be good sports fans and they're trying to remain engaged with their teams, they're finding it more and more costly. Their attention is being pulled in a million directions. Their credit card information is being pulled in a million directions. What made you come to the idea, or how did you get your attention?
Well, I think in a way it's more what was distracting my attention, because the both of us, we got out of the mainstream grind of it and we launched our Substacks. I do think that gives you a different perspective. And it's that old Upton Sinclair quote about it's easier for a man to understand something when his salary is no longer dependent on understanding it, or whatever. I screwed up the quote. It's hard for a man to understand something when his salary is dependent on his not understanding it. Phew, that's a tough one. You know, I leave The Athletic, and I was very happy at The Athletic, but we're reliant on sports gambling over there, or we were, and we're reliant on a lot of this stuff that's trying to squeeze the customer. And what you notice when you track the growth of these leagues is that there, for the most part, isn't growth. Maybe for some of these newer concerns, like F1, but these sports aren't getting more popular, and the next generation doesn't seem to be as interested in them. There is this survey that was in Sports Business Journal that said teenagers right now, only 15% relay that they enjoy watching sports. So what's ended up happening, I think, is that because these sports leagues cannot count on continued growth in the United States, they're looking for other ways to get money from the customer. They can't grow the pie. So what they're doing is something that I've called fracking the pie. They're finding different ways to extract money out of the sports consumer because they just can't trust that they're going to get more consumers. And that's one of the reasons why these prices have gone up when it comes to how to watch these paywalls. And of course, sports gambling, the aforementioned sports gambling, that's a way to get more money out of the consumer when you no longer can trust that you're going to get more consumers.
I am feeling it. And I think you very succinctly put a finger on it. And it concerns me because if you're asking more and more, are you inviting in new people into the room? I mean, are they growing their sport with new subscribers, or are they creating an obstacle where people on the outside might go, hey, there's a barrier there, I can't get to it?
Yeah, and I can't tell them what's smartest business. I think it's really easy. I hear this all the time with the NBA, and I'm sure some of the Blazers fans listening to you feel this way, of why is it the Lakers on national TV a bunch of times, even when they're not good? And I see a bunch of people on NBA Twitter who have these complaints, and they say, you should invest in the next generation. You should have Oklahoma City on there. It's easy to say it when you're not ESPN and you're going to get a million fewer people watching that game. It's really hard to make that kind of investment when you don't trust it's actually going to help you out, and you know you've got a bird in the hand. And so I agree that you want to lower the barrier of entry and you want to get more fans, but what I think has happened is that there's been a loss of trust so they can get more fans. There's too much noise in the culture. It's not like when we were kids and sports were just afforded a big mainstream audience no matter what for all the major leagues. Now you're competing with what anybody could possibly want to amuse themselves with at any given moment at their fingertips. And in that environment, I think it's really hard for these leagues to grow. And so they're just going to be very much focused on the people they already have and getting the dollars from the people who already bought in. Now, this is a very bleak picture, but I should say something else. I think the fans they do have are far better informed than when I was about the sports I loved as a kid and fans were in general back in the day. And I think that's what helps you out, because you're a deep diver and you're somebody who doesn't just give surface level. I think there's a big market out there for going deep on the sports that people do love. There's just not as many people who love sports, so it's a bit of a paradox.
Yeah, and I think you're right. There's a lot of surface level content that's out there. There's a lot of people who are trying to pretend they're covering games. They're not really covering the sport in the games. So the deeper that you dive, I think the richer you get. And I think people go, okay, yeah, I will. I see value in that content. You mentioned this or alluded to it. Do you think streaming kicked the era off? Did streaming start this, or what do you think started this fracking that you say?
Yeah, I mean, streaming certainly is what started to hurt you in the wallet as a fan. And these streaming wars became a race to whoever could have a coveted game that they could put behind a paywall. I don't know if this term is going to catch on, but I tried to coin peacockification for when Peacock put that NFL playoff game behind a paywall, and how that's going to be this big trend, that they're going to get something that you usually got for free. And hey, you know what, customer, doesn't this sound great? Instead of getting something that you've gotten for free your entire life, now you're going to have to pay for it. How does that sound? Doesn't that sound wonderful? That's the part where I think people are seeing it. I don't think streaming necessarily caused this sort of the lessening popularity in sports and whatnot. I think it's more a symptom of how the internet just made it a really competitive entertainment environment. And it just turned it into a situation where sports just couldn't easily be as popular and mainstream as they once could. And so it's part of that story. I don't think it's the cause of what's going on, but it's part of that story of now we're in a fractured environment, and now the people with coveted sports properties are finding new ways to charge money for them when you used to just get them for free on the television.
Ethan, when I was a kid, you know, we only had Monday night football and Sunday football, Sunday afternoon football or morning, and we waited all week, and I was a diehard fan, and I would find my team, and, you know, I was into it. You mentioned that the regular engaged viewer might be more glued to the product, but what about the casual sports fan? Is this death to the casual sports fan who just floats around?
Yes, this is what I really should have probably titled my article, is the death of the casual fan. And it's funny because casual has become this pejorative term. You see Kevin Durant on Twitter, he'll dismiss people as casuals. But you want casuals. You want the most casuals to be a healthy sport. You want people who aren't dialed in but are going to give you a chance when it's the championship round of whatever you're doing. And this has been so interesting to me because people are always arguing, especially with the NBA, over the ratings. The pattern I've noticed, because I watch these arguments take place, is that in the earlier rounds, the viewership will be competitive with the past, and all these NBA diehards and NBA boosters, they'll thump their chests and they'll say the NBA is back and the haters are wrong. And then when they get to the deeper round, conference championship, it's less. And then they get to the championship, they get to the finals, and it's half the audience, especially now with two smaller market teams. And it just looks like there are fewer casuals. It looks like there's this baked-in audience, this high floor of NBA diehards who are going to show up for those rounds. And then when you get to the point where you usually could just rely on all these Americans trundling in because now it's the big event, and they're not there. And you see this pattern not just in the NBA. It's a pattern that you can see in baseball, and I think to a certain extent in hockey, which I don't follow as closely, and it's a bit confounded because you've got Stanley Cup on cable, but they have low numbers too. So it's outside of the NFL, it's just an interesting situation where the playoffs still have this big audience, but that audience isn't nearly as big when it's at its biggest.
Ethan Strauss, House of Strauss on Substack, is our guest. The the TV deals that we're seeing in college football obviously were massive. The NBA gets this TV deal that, you know, is changing the way that we might consume the NBA product. I'm curious, you know, what you think of this. Like, I think sometimes these leagues and these companies chase the dollar at the expense of alienating fans. I think it's and I think that's what you're writing about, really. The inside the NBA crew and the way the NBA is covered, I know this is near and dear to you. What do you make of how that went down and, you know, Charles Barkley and that show, and where does it fit for you in the ecosystem anymore? Because I felt like it was the show that casual fans could tune into if they didn't want to watch every game.
Definitely. And there are a lot of NBA Twitter people who would get very angry that the commentary wasn't as observant as they would want it to be. And I just never cared, man. They're so funny. They're so good. There's so much chemistry. And I think this is something that ESPN screwed up along the way. They were always chasing some new spin on something and very much afraid of that this or that guy had gotten stale. They forced Chris Berman out, I think, before. They didn't literally force him out, but they completely marginalized him. And that was somebody who had a connectivity to the sports fan, the ESPN fan. And I think inside the NBA, it won in the end because it's so good and so funny, but also there's so much noise in the culture that there's a heightened value for whatever is still there and has been there and is familiar. And that's why I don't want them to go. And I've got my fears that they're going to get screwed up by the whole transition to ESPN Disney. But I can't say that I want them to end, and I can't say that I want them to close up shop, just because there are so few products out there that are familiar over a span of decades, and that's this product. So, yeah, it's unfortunate that they're moving on from Turner. As a fan, I don't think it's going to improve my experience, but it's the almighty dollar, and Warner Brothers, the parent company of Turner, is in such dire straits that I couldn't tell you that the NBA is making an incorrect decision there.
I am also watching these finals, and you know, was kind of trashed by the national media who said, oh, it's small markets and Stephen A's playing solitaire and it's just so dismissive. And there are a lot of people, Ethan, in Portland who didn't like that, because seeing Oklahoma City or seeing Minnesota in the Western Conference Finals or seeing even the Pacers in this gives hope to a franchise like the Blazers. What did you make of this matchup and how it's being greeted?
Well, I thought that was a problem. I think a matchup like this, the problem isn't the small markets. It's the lack of familiarity. I think that's something that we can forget about the casuals. The casual needs multiple run-ins, multiple encounters to build up an awareness of who these people are. And if you're a diehard NBA fan, you know all about Tyrese Halliburton. You know all about the Oklahoma City Thunder players. But for a lot of people who aren't dialed into the NBA, they don't, and it's not like Steph Curry versus LeBron James. And another thing I'll say, by the way, I think it's a misnomer that you need big markets or big ratings, or it's a little bit complicated. David Stern said that his favorite finals matchup was the Lakers against the Lakers. But you know what the biggest Western Conference Finals ratings were? It was the Lakers against the Sacramento Kings. And I believe, to do a Portland reference point, massive ratings for the Lakers with Shaq and Kobe, hate to bring it up for your listeners, against the Blazers in that absolute classic of a series. And so what really connects is story. And when it's a big market against the scrappy underdog small market, that's a story. When it's glamorous or whatever, highfalutin Bay Area Warriors against Cleveland, that's something that people tune into, just like they tune into big Goliath LeBron James against smaller Steph Curry. So that's what the league needs to get back to. It's not about the markets. It's about the story and how you market them. And you can't just sit back and rely on this idea that the big market is going to give you the big number. I don't think people cared that much about the New York Knicks, frankly. I don't. I think that they had an absence of stories. So that's something I would say. I think that there's some truth in the idea that a big market has more people invested, baked into it. But this is also a time that you've got to cut through the noise, and you're not going to rely on market to do it. You've got to be able to focus on what's interesting to fans and sell it effectively.
Ethan Strauss, houseofstrauss.com, with us. I got to ask you about the Warriors, because that's a franchise that you're familiar with and have been around. How much more do they have? I kind of expected, I was disappointed where they went out, and obviously the injury to Curry hurt, but I expected they might be playing for the Western Conference Championship. I kind of thought the Butler move was the move they needed to make. What do you make of the Warriors' window?
I think they had a much better chance at it than people would admit after everything shaken out, if Steph doesn't get hurt. They matched up really well with the Wolves. Jaden McDaniels is a fantastic defender. He's just been utterly flummoxed by Steph Curry. And similarly with the Thunder, I don't know why, but the Warriors look great against them regular season, even before Butler. And I think there's something about the Thunder defense that's fantastic for 95% of the league. But the Warriors are a team that plays backwards. They play differently than everybody else because the offense is built around Steph. So I thought they had a real puncher's chance at it. And I think they could have a puncher's chance at it again. But the reality is there's so many injuries these days in the NBA, and they're old. And so that's really the sort of Damocles over them, more than their effectiveness on a given night, is are they going to get back there and they're going to break apart. The Kuminga decision is the big decision and the big road fork, and that's going to take some intestinal fortitude to make a choice on one way or the other. I think they should trade him, but I don't say that with a lot of courage in my voice. There is that chance that he flourishes and really pops and becomes this high-level scorer. I think it's a 20% chance. I think they need to deal him for one last ride, get some quality players. I think that's the choice they have to make, but, man, it's a hard one.
Ethan, the NBA, you know, obviously at some point they will expand. Maybe it's Vegas and Seattle. It is Vegas and Seattle. We all know it. They won't say it, at least not in those words. Why won't they say it, and what are they waiting for?
They probably just want to appeal to a maximum number of potential buyers and maybe also put a little fear in those cities that they have to do what the NBA requires in order to get the teams, right? I mean, that's how we ended up here in the first place, was Seattle didn't put up and the NBA said, we're taking our business elsewhere. Not only are we taking our business elsewhere, this is now the loaded gun that we can point at any other city that we don't think is being as amenable to what we want. It actually put the NBA in a weird position now that I think about it. A strange shift with NBA basketball is that it's in smaller markets than the MLB. I think the NBA actually has four markets smaller than the smallest MLB market because it placed such a premium on getting stadium money in these towns that were willing to fork it over because they didn't have too many other attractions. I'm thinking about Oklahoma, thinking about Memphis, these sorts of cities. So I don't know if that was the best move for the NBA in the aggregate. They did it at a time when stadium money mattered more and TV money wasn't at its astronomical height that it's on now. And now I'm digressing, man. I don't even know if I'm answering your question. I just think that's interesting to me that they went into these small markets and then they'll have a finals and then they'll complain about the small markets are in the finals and they'll just look at it and go, hey, this is the result of your strategy, so you better be happy with it.
Houseofstrauss.com if you want to read Ethan's writings. Blazers are for sale. There's a little bit of hand-wringing in Portland, Ethan, about, you know, would a potential buyer try to move him out of Portland? Do you think Adam Silver would repeat the sins of David Cern, or did he learn something with seeing the Sonics leave for OKC? Are all bets off? How do you read this from the outside in?
God, I hope so, but I don't trust. I don't know if Silver, I hate to say that he's not a human, but there's something robotic about him that doesn't really care about legacy. I mean, look at the way they change the uniforms every game. He doesn't even seem to care about something as basic as that, as people looking at a game and just seeing the familiar color, the familiar colors of the team. I think it's just all about getting as much money at every single moment. When you look at these finals, it looks like a NASCAR jacket of all the different brands splattered across the court, and obviously they didn't have the classic NBA Finals decal. So while I would hope that they would keep the team in Portland, I can't trust that they're going to have common sense and understand that there's a real value in having franchises that have been with the league for decades and are rooted in the community like that. I'm optimistic that it'll work out for you guys, but I can't trust Adam Silver being wise. I haven't really seen him be wise outside of an ability to negotiate a TV deal when it comes to the league and its stature.
You're so right about that. Yeah, I think about commissioners, and I probably grew up thinking the commissioner's job was to protect the sport, and now we watch the commissioners basically protecting the owners of the sport, and that's about it. Ethan Strauss, houseofstrauss.com. You should read him, subscribe to him. Thank you, Ethan, for your time. Smart stuff.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
There he goes. How hard is it to be a sports fan in today's world? Where do you find the barriers to be? And I'm not talking about, I'm turned off because college athletics has become more like the NFL. It's not what I'm talking about. I'm literally talking about financial barriers. I can't afford to see my team play. I can't afford to go to the arena and buy tickets or to the stadium and buy tickets. They're making it hard for me to be a sports fan because they're squeezing and squeezing, trying to get more and more. I would love to hear from you. 503-417-7575. How much do you relate to that? And as a consumer, what are those decisions like in your household? You know, and you go to buy the Sunday ticket, it's an investment, right? Or you go to subscribe to the NBA League Pass or Major League Baseball or MLS, and they've got you in a number of different ways paying a number of different subscriptions. I've heard this over and over from people who will tell me, they're like, hey, you know, I need to know what I'm supposed to be subscribed to this season. And I have to ask a lot of questions to get them there. And I'm like, well, which teams do you follow? Which leagues are they in? Which sports are you into? How diehard are you? Is this just a one-off thing or whatnot? 503-417-7575. You tell me, how much do you relate to this fracking that is going on? And you heard Ethan Strauss talk about it. Is there such a thing as a casual sports fan anymore? You tell me.